Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
It is the Sunday morning wake-up call with Sean McCoy. It is our annual look at the Virginia Film Festival. My guest at the moment is Wes Harris, programmer for the festival. Wes, you've been there for 11 years, and you've been coming to this show for 11 years.
It feels like it sometimes. No, but yeah, 11 years at the festival, and we've been coming in and sitting down with you here at PVC and over at NRN back in the day as well.
That's right.
We're happy to keep that tradition going.
Well, we don't say those initials anymore, but thank you.
Boy.
So the Virginia Film Festival starts November 9th. Run for 4 days, November 9th through 12th. I am holding in my hand, you can hear it here, The official program guide. It's the size of a small phone book.
Yeah, what do you think of that soft touch cover this year? It's pretty fancy,
it,
right?
It is very
schmancy. Perfect bound, all of that?
It's past fancy. It went straight to schmancy.
Oh, boy.
And you can pick this up all sorts of places. Where can you pick up the festival guide?
So it's really going to start popping up places all around town this coming week. Mm-hmm. So you can find it at the UVA Arts box office at Cobra Theater.
There's stacks of them there. I saw them last night.
Yep. And when we open up our downtown box office in the Violet Crown, mm-hmm. In the lobby there, we'll have copies there available. It'll be dropped into CIVO Weekly.
Right.
And we'll have dedicated stands with stacks of these things popping up all around town.
So look for the kind of dark sky blue program guide with the butterflies.
They're Virginia moths. Virginia moths, actually.
Oh, excuse me. I see that now.
It's like a nice nighttime motif.
I see that now. It is a nice nighttime motif with Virginia Film Festival at the top, official program at the bottom, and right in the middle, the numbers 3 and 0. Mm-hmm. What does that signify?
This is our 30th year. It's a big 30th
one. 30th year. Yeah. That is amazing.
Yeah, it's one of the many things that distinguishes us from the, you know, proliferation of thousands of quote unquote film festivals that pop up all around the country every year. Very few regional or even less established festivals have been around for anywhere close to that.
And I think another thing that makes us, if not unique, nearly unique, is our association with the university.
That's the other big thing. It allows us to have sort of a foot in both worlds, meaning we can be a part of the festival circuit of major films going around the country, traveling around, screening basically from Sundance through the beginning of award season, which is about where we are now. Our early November dates allow us to be kind of the last ramp off of the festival season into award season, following Venice and Telluride and Toronto and others, so we can position ourselves in a way to even be unique amongst them with our home at UVA, to be really a valuable platform to distributors and filmmakers and studios to showcase that the films that they're doing in a given year to a really just stellar audience.
Right.
So that's the reputation that we're known for, is how amazing our audience members are.
Well, we'll get to the films in a moment. And by the way, we're vamping a little bit. Because there's an empty chair next to you. We'll assume that Jody, who's a very busy man these days, will join us at some point.
We made it solo without him last year.
We did.
Perfectly fine,
We did perfectly fine.
No, but he can speak to a lot of the broad strokes and a lot of the footprint that he's able to build for both our festival and the arts more broadly in town.
Because Jody is not just the director of the film festival, but also vice provost for the arts at UVA. Let's talk about the audiences, because that is something that attracts people here. And I think it's important to point out that it's the Virginia Film Festival, and people come here from around the country, around the world.
Absolutely.
To come to this festival. In lovely, lovely Charlottesville. I was about to say downtown Charlottesville, but actually, the festival is all over the place. Where we've talked about where people can go to get up the festival guide, where do people go to see the films?
Yeah, so we have a great number of venues. We do have a nice sort of a circuit of venues downtown, where we're in the Vinegar Hill Theater, which is now run by Lighthouse Studio, the Violet Crown, the Paramount, our opening night galas at the Jefferson Theater, and that's a really nice navigable way to build a circuit of films in a sort of in an afternoon and evening.
Yeah.
We also have two theaters on the grounds of UVA, Newcomb and Culberth, where we screen, and two sort of satellite locations out in the community at St. Anne's Belfield School and PVCC, the Community College, off of 20, which is both are, they feel farther away than they are maybe kind of mentally for folks, but it's really just sort of a 5-10 minute drive one way or the other and kind of escape the fray of downtown. And
and there's parking PVCC and St. Anne's.
Very easy and accessible. So it's those are our two most recently added venues, and it's a way to just make ourselves that much more accessible to the community.
Right. So really, during those 4 days, starting November 9th, Film Festival kind of takes over the town.
Yeah.
And it is not uncommon to be in the downtown mall and be walking past world-renowned directors, writers, even the occasional actor.
Sure.
A familiar face.
Right.
Will walk right past you in the downtown mall if you're not paying attention.
And, well, that's kind of the beauty of it, too, is that people are paying enough attention, but it's not in a sort of paparazzi, you know, you said schmancy earlier way. People don't get so hung up on the schmanciness of it. It's a very kind of low-key and substantive experience for the guest artists we bring in, rather than the kind of red carpet meat market type affair that you get at a selling festival or a marketplace festival where artists or distributors are coming and trying to sell their films.
Right.
That's not what we are. We're able to have it be more purely about that audience engagement, that two-way conversation between creators and artists and audience members.
And that's one of the great things, one of the great aspects and selling points of the festival, I think, is that it's not just going to see a film, because there are many opportunities now. You know, we have more theaters here in town. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, streaming services available. But here's the chance to go see a new film, in many cases. We'll get to the other cases. Brand new films with very often filmmakers. You'll get a writer, you'll get a director, you'll get an actor, you'll get somebody who was involved with the film, and some kind of discussion afterwards. Mm-hmm. And the discussions are, you know, with people at UVA, for example, who are experts in their field, who brought in to talk about the particular film. You have guest programmers.
Yeah, and those are those resources I was speaking toward earlier that is able to make us uniquely able to have that guiding hand to the conversation, that expert framing and moderation to these discussions and Q&As that goes beyond the simple kind of stereotypical cliche at a film festival where it's always kind of like, oh, well, what'd you shoot it on?
Yeah.
You know, and then it doesn't kind of elevate the conversation, really. We'll have cinematographic conversations and technical stuff for when there's a particular, you know, interest, but we do try to elevate it beyond that, but not in such a way where it's stuffy or overly academic.
Right.
You know, I whenever I talk to professors and other community leaders that we bring in, I always say, you know, it's great to be one or two steps ahead of the audience, but I don't want you to be five steps ahead.
Right.
Because that's not fun.
Right.
That's more, you know, sort of a hegemonic thing that I'm not too terribly interested in. I want to have it be something that you want to try to keep up with, but not feel intimidated by. And that's the sweet spot for me of just really substantive conversations that dive deep into not just the what, but the why of a lot of the movies that we show.
My guest right now is Wes Harris, programmer for the Virginia Film Festival. You've been doing it for 11/30ths.
Mm. That's true.
over a third of the festival.
It's kind of crazy to think.
You've been involved.
Actually.
We've talked about where to get the guy. We've talked about where to see the films. Where do people get tickets?
Yeah, we're easy to find. We're at virginiafilmfestival.org. And even for some of the screenings that will show up as having advanced tickets sold out, there are still always some number of house seats that are likely to be available, say 15 minutes prior to screening. So if your heart's set on seeing a particular film and it has advanced tickets sold out, there's almost always a very good chance. You know, there's no control we have over when people start lining up for them.
Sure.
But there's a chance day of at the venue, which I'll point out though, for those tickets, it's cash or check only. So that's the one thing there, but there's an opportunity to try something on the fly the day of as well.
Right. And, of course, there's always alternatives. In fact, sometimes achingly so. And I imagine as a programmer, that's kind of what you want. You want people to have so many good choices.
Yeah, and we try to stagger it and be very thoughtful and mindful when we're slotting our films in terms of where and when. So, you know, if we're looking at a particular thematic grouping of films, we don't want to cannibalize those audience by doing them all at once.
Sure.
You know, we'll break them out during the days of the festival, stagger them in a way that you can kind of trace that through line through the days and sort of self-curate an experience like that. So we try to build it in a way that allows people to, you know, sort of program their weekend, you know, kind of what we do in pulling together the 150 plus films. We then try to set it up in a way that people can, that's a little more digestible and approachable rather than this overwhelming block of titles, which is still kind of what it feels like. But we try to be mindful of it in that way.
Yeah. So we'll get to some of those thematic groupings in a moment. I want to encourage people to do two things. One, go out and pick up the festival guide. I mean, it's beautiful. The you know, it's good old-fashioned paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's glossy and it's slick, and you get a lot of information. And the way it's grouped, it's not just pick it up in an alphabetical listing of films. Oh, no. There are spotlights from the very beginning. There's pages I'm looking at right now mention who our guests are going to be. We'll get to that in a moment. And then you can sort of get through the thematic groupings and some of the sort of mini festivals within the festivals. And then when you go to the website, which is
VirginiaFilmFestival.org,
you can actually then go in and select the films you want and put them in a cart. And it's actually really nicely done, the way it's organized.
Yeah, and both in this printed program and on the website, we also have a scheduled grid, so you can visualize, you can see what overlaps, what, you know, kind of how much time you would have to get across town to see a given film. So that's in the back of this program here, as well as on the site, and we have that on our website available as a PDF if someone does want to print it out and you know aren't able to grab one of these things like the feel of that paper in their hand and want to scribble notes and chart their weekend.
You can actually plot your entire weekend. And you know what, it's funny you should mention that, Wes, because in previous years that grid has always been like the center spread. And this is I forget what they call this.
Perfect bound.
Yeah. Perfect bound.
So it's got a spine and some text on it. So this year, since we weren't beholden to having that center spread, and also since we've grown enough that it's now four pages rather than the two, we have a whole grid per day. We've moved it to the back, so it's really easy to just quickly flip from the back cover right in and find that grid.
And what I like this year is that you open up the program to the middle, and you get four pages of photographs celebrating 30 years. The microphone can hear me turning pages right now.
It was really fun to pull that together.
Yeah. I mean, just pictures of some of the great...
And you remember some of these. You were there for a bunch of these.
I go back to the early 90s, before you were born.
Nah.
But yes, it's just a good reminder of some of the really amazing guests that we've had in the past. Let's talk about some of the guests that we're having this year. You can turn to page 22 at home. If you already have your festival guide, you can turn to page 22. And then we get an alphabetical listing of some of our guests. Who leaps out to you? Who are you particularly excited about spending time with?
Yeah, I mean, we can get to some of the obvious big ones that people have known about in town for a while, like Spike Lee, and we'll speak toward that broader program in a bit. But also in our anniversary year, 30th annual festival this year, we're doing a couple of things where we're looking back to our own history and bringing some of the programs that have been really fondly remembered and popular over the years. So one of those is, people might remember from the 90s and early aughts, when Roger Ebert would come and lead his famous shot-by-shot workshops, where he would take 2-3 days and dissect Chinatown or Citizen Kane, or you know, and just really dig his heels in with an audience. And it was this open participatory thing where he would let you know, he would encourage the audience to, this was back in the days of Laserdisc when he was starting it. So he would travel in with his own Laserdisc player that he was one of the first to get. And he would say to the audience, at any point, you can shout, stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you notice something, if you're confused by something, he writes about it several times in some of his books, like his Great Movies books. He'll reference specific moments at the Virginia Film Festival. One that leaps out in mind is in that Citizen Kane workshop. You know, the scene where early on in the in his boyhood cabin where there's this impossible motion where the camera basically has to go through a table.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of built it so that the table was in half physically. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of, you know, slid it back together
right.
after this giant 35mm camera slid through. And you can, in his commentary on the DVD, you can kind of cheat and see, like, oh, the, you know, the thing over there is wiggling. And you, so he was, like, really clever in pointing that out. But when he was here, he had never seen before a woman yelled stop and just goes, like, the vase moved. And he had never, you know, he just, another little just sort of cute thing that he had never seen before, you know, even 50 viewings of the film. And actually, ooh, and this, not to go off on a tangent, but it's a super fun one, so I don't mind. When I was at the Telluride Film Festival this past Labor Day weekend, Werner Herzog and Ebert's widow, Chaz Ebert, were Bert sitting...
Werner and Chaz, your buddies.
Come on, my man and my man's a woman. Herzog was a big guest of ours last year,
and
was just tremendous. But they were doing a book signing for, I think it's called Ebert on Herzog. And as I walked up to the table, they had just finished a conversation talking about the Virginia Film Festival and her memories of coming with Roger back in the day for that and Herzog's recent memories from last year. So it was just this lovely little moment and just goes to show the...
And they looked up and there you were.
Yeah, and Herzog remembered me, which I got a tickle out of because I was already worried about whether I would have to reintroduce myself and all that, but no.
Yeah, and that's... I mean, I remember late lamented... Roger Ebert talk about, you know, you would just see him walking down the downtown mall, walking from one venue to another, or stopping somewhere and having lunch. And, you know, as long as you were respectful of his time, he'd stop talk to you. And that and last year, I remember you escorting Werner Herzog around and you introduced me. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I think I wasn't too much of a fanboy. We are talking about the Virginia Film Festival. My guest, Wes Harris. This is Sean McCord. You're listening to The Wake Up Call on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. It is the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. This is Sean McCord talking with Wes Harris, programmer of the Virginia Film Festival. Virginia Film Festival starts November 9th for 4 days, November 9, 10, 11, 12, on the Downtown Mall at UVA, at St. Anne's Belfield, at PVCC's Dickinson Theater, all over the freaking place. You can find out what's going on at the Virginia Film Festival by going to virginiafilmfestival.org and pick up one of these really, really nice-looking. You know what? In fact, you should pick up two. You should put one in a Mylar bag.
They're super pretty this year. I'm not going to lie.
They are very pretty. And mine is...
Pick up a Golden Age-sized bag and board over at Atlas Comics, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
We're looking about those dimensions.
Yeah. Collect
them all. That was for you, Sean. That was for you.
I appreciate it. Okay, so we've been talking about some of the guests that are coming. Let's talk about some of the films that some of our guests are bringing. Let's go ahead and move to some of the festival highlights because... And actually... I wanted, this is something I wanted to bring up specifically with you. This is not just the 30th anniversary of the Virginia Film Festival, but this is Virginia Film Festival in Charlottesville in 2017.
Yeah.
This is a post-August 12th Charlottesville, where our little town, as everyone listening knows, has become not only the focus for racial issues, but has become something of a meme.
Yeah.
Now people.
Yeah,
just,
we live in a hashtag now.
Yeah, exactly. People just say hashtag Charlottesville, and it has a weight of its own.
It's a concept now, not just our town, but it's that's been a big part of our conversations with artists and
distributors.
Right.
So how does something as big as the Virginia Film Festival respond to hashtag Charlottesville?
Well, in kind of two main ways, and they're two sides of the same coin, and I see them both as versions of healing.
Mm-hmm.
One of those ways is to be aggressively responsive to attack the issues head on from the people who came to our town and the conversation that they started in August and how to be responsive to that. So we have a sidebar of films exploring race in America. Obviously, one huge part of that is Spike Lee attending with his documentary Four Little Girls, which explores another instance of domestic terrorism, the bombing of a Birmingham church in the 60s that killed four young women. We have another other documentaries and shorts and narratives even that attack that head on and in the kind of weighty, somber way. The other side of that is we're still a festival and we're not going to let them take our fun away.
Mm-mm.
So there's plenty of just excitement and the shininess and the fun that we have every year, because that's as important. And these are two sides of that same coin of healing. So we're not going to stop doing what we've always done. And we're going to do a lot of very direct responsive programming as well. So this year we're bringing in more filmmakers of color, more women filmmakers than I have any memory of bringing as many in recent memory. And that's not even necessarily because of or have anything to do with A12. It just kind of happened to be the case.
Yeah.
And then once we kind of realized where we were and the job that we were going to be doing this year, we doubled down on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's a lot to find in the program, and a number of artists who are going to be coming in and, you know, speaking toward that experience. We're bringing in the creative director and founder of the Africana Independent Film Festival, which is a new organization in Richmond. So their founder, Anjali Moon, is coming over. We're pulling together a showcase of some of the quote-unquote best of from their program back in September. And obviously Spike Lee, we've got Ezra Edelman coming in. We're doing a screening of O.J. Made in America.
Right. And this is something that the film festival has been doing new in the past few years. And that is also highlighting television shows, because television isn't just television anymore. Television the O.J. Made in America.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically a 5-hour or
I think it's closer to like seven.
Right.
Yeah, it's five parts.
Basically film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're showing all of those, I think back to back one day and then culminating.
Yeah, Thursday we'll be doing parts 1 and 2, Friday parts 3 and 4. Both of those events are free, in Vinegar Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Saturday, Ezra Edelman, Academy Award winning Ezra Edelman. That's the other baffling thing, is that this 7-hour miniseries won the best documentary Oscar, which is
7-hour miniseries on television.
Yeah.
It just shows
how I don't think the model's broken. It's just sort of fractalized.
They've kind of bled into
It's really exciting.
A Venn diagram where things like this are right.
The screening of the fifth part is the one that is ticketed and that Ezra will be here for to discuss. And that's on Saturday the 11th.
What my radio audience doesn't see is that my guest, Wes Harris, programmer of the Virginia Film Festival, is not cheating by looking at the guide. At the grid in the back of the guide, he knows these things.
You've been in my office. You've seen my giant dry erase wall.
I have, but it still impresses me
that
you know where all these films are and at what times and at what locations, just at the snap of a finger.
I tell you, we spend I don't know how many hours just literally staring at that wall in my office, because it is this kind of mental exercise thing, and it's really lovely to just be able to see it all there and craft around it, and it's almost like totemic in a way. I mean, it's kind of this like shrine to, you know, don't smudge the dry. I mean, it's a dry erase board, but it's the Virginia Film Festival on a wall at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. So, which people can see by going to the back of the Film Festival guide, which they can pick up all over town, and also look at by going to virginfilmfestival.org. What are some of the other films, as long as we're in this sort of sub thing, what are some of the other films worth mentioning in this Race in America grouping?
So another one that also touches on the we were just talking about television, there's a new Netflix series called The Confession Tapes.
Right. And again, Netflix, exactly. Not really shown in the theater, not yeah. really shown on TV, just out there and available.
But when you frame it in a context like this, mm-hmm. and this particular episode of this series, which was actually produced by a couple of UVA alums that I knew in school.
Yeah.
It's a series where each episode of it focuses on a different instance of coerced confessions.
Right.
This particular one is...
the series is called The Confession Tapes.
The Confession Tapes. And this right. particular episode focuses on the 8th and H murders in 1984, which took place in Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. Essentially, this group of young African-American men were... painted as being part of this gang which did not exist. Mm. And one of the members who had some, mental challenges was actually coerced into what it was then turned into evidence to incarcerate these men, six of whom are still in jail today. So we're bringing in an individual from the UVA Innocence Project mm-hmm. to moderate this conversation with these filmmakers. And it, again, just goes to show that when... That's what a festival can be. I mean, this thing is screening on Netflix. You can go watch it on your couch when you get home.
Sure.
But you're not going to have this guiding hand conversation with the creators, with the UVA Innocence Project. So that's what elevates it from the keyboard, essentially.
It's like live bonus material.
Sure. That you get to ask questions at. You know, you get to participate.
Yeah.
And
live interactive bonus material.
Yeah, it's almost, right. you know, yeah, it goes so far around that horseshoe, right?
Pin that on your wall.
Yeah.
I'm an old film nerd, as you know. Mm-hmm. So one of the, you didn't even bother to disagree with me on that. One,
the old part or the nerd part?
Exactly. One of the interesting documentaries you got coming in as part of this look at race in America is Birth of a Movement, mm-hmm. which is a documentary about D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation mm-hmm. and how when this film was released in 1915, which it's a very, we're mm-hmm. talking about the original Birth of a Nation,
yeah,
the silent film, very hard to watch. I was a film student. I had to sit through it a couple of times, and yeah. it's just really difficult to
once
watch.
Once is enough.
Once honestly. Is definitely enough.
I mean, it's kind of exciting to look at it in the cinematographic way.
Sure.
Literally watching film grammar be invented.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
but
is enough.
But being invented yeah. to, it's basically, it's a recruitment film for the KKK.
Yeah.
Talk about how these poor white Southern working folks who were trod upon after the Civil War, you know, grouped together in a friendly fraternal organization and went about and reasserted their rights.
Yeah.
Something that's very familiar to us here in Charlottesville.
Right?
So the documentary Birth of a Movement is about Birth of a Nation and about the reaction, particularly among the burgeoning African-American press to right. Birth of a Nation when it first came out in 1915.
Yeah, and particular William M. Trotter, who ran a newspaper in Boston and led this movement to get the film banned in theaters, mm-hmm. to have it not reach its tentacles out and do what its aim was. So we have Bester Cram coming in, who worked on that film and worked on some of the programming in Montpelier's The Mere Distinction of Color exhibition, which is another informing factor for this programming. And if folks haven't been up to James Madison's Montpelier, they've just recently restored recreated the former yeah. slave dwellings up there
yeah.
and are really kind of unburying a lot of the reality of the story of one of the largest slaveholders in the state.
Yeah.
And actually, you'll see on the back of our tickets this year, it has some information about James Madison's Montpelier, a code for discounted entry for tours up there. So that'll be on the back of all of our tickets.
So hang on to your tickets, yeah. folks. And I just want to bring up one more film that you're showing as part of this look at race in America is Hidden Figures. Mm-hmm. This is a film that came out last year, got quite a bit of attention. But there are several Virginia connections to this film. And tell us why people would want to go back and see this particular screening of Hidden Figures.
So we have a great panel, discussion panel pulled together for it. It'll be moderated by Deborah McDowell of the Carter G. Woodson Institute, but really shaped around Margot Lee Shetterly, who is the author of the book on which the film is based.
Yes.
And she's a UVA alumna. She works with the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, and she's just a really lovely speaker and an amazing mind. And she's going to be the crux around which this discussion is built. And so it'll blend the history, the movie making, the authorship. There's a lot of different grounds that discussion is going to cover.
Right. So even if you saw the film this last year, come again, because there's going to be a kind of a discussion that that you just don't get
exactly
outside of the Virginia Film Festival.
And same with, you were talking about our repertory or classic films as well. I mean, there are a lot of reasons to come and see a movie you might have seen before, but only at home.
Yeah.
So, like this year, we were talking about the Ebert Shot by Shots earlier.
Yes.
We're bringing in Hal Ashby's biographer,
Nick
Dawson.
I'm so glad
Dawson.
You brought that up. Because
we're going to do a 3-day deconstruction of Harold and Maude.
Okay. So I am so excited about this. Harold and Maude. I mean, first of all, if you haven't seen it, shame on you. Sure. Great film. One of my favorites. Bud Cort, who had an interesting career, but never as interesting as this particular film. And I was actually a passing acquaintance of Colin Higgins.
All right.
A screenwriter. But we both went to UCLA. He went a few years before I did, but they brought him back in to talk about some of the later films that he did.
Yeah.
He did why am I forgetting the Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn.
Oh,
yeah.
You stole it from my brain, too.
Yeah. Some of those films. Yeah. So I got a chance to meet him, like, in class as he came in and he talked. Just a really nice, interesting guy who, unfortunately, is with us no longer.
Yeah.
And they shot portions of the film in my hometown in the East San Francisco Bay Area.
Cool.
Yeah. So there are some... I just love watching the film and going, hey, I used to hike over there.
Yeah, that fence. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got Nick coming in, Ashby's biographer, but also the producer of Harold and Maude, Chuck Mulvihill, is coming in. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about that. And I know Nick is as well. So it's going to be this really fun kind of two-man show and working with the audience to... it's a nice restoration of the film. So these are the reasons that, you know, we can build opportunities for reviewing. Some of the others, like we have a great brand new restoration of Bonnie and Clyde that we're showing in its 50th year.
This is the 50th anniversary, right.
A lovely new restoration of Tarkovsky's Stalker that I'm super excited about. Me and, you know, 11 or 12 other folks in town.
Well, tell us about that film, Wes.
Well, it's kind of better to not. I mean, I know that sounds kind of obnoxious, but it's one of those films
tell us something to come see.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the most kind of deliberative and sort of insidiously kind of paced sci-fi epic, but it's this epic that's kind of crammed into something the size of a black hole. It's was one of the first sort of anti 2001 A Space Odyssey type sort of ways to be epic that I saw for the first time in a film class with Robert Kolker, who turned me onto that and is probably going to make it to that screening. It's a beautiful new restoration that's been touring the country over the last few months. I think both it and Bonnie and Clyde are both 4K restorations. So this will essentially be the first time you'll ever have seen these movies, you know?
And speaking of 4K restorations, 50th anniversary screening of The Graduate.
Yeah.
Now, again, you may think you've seen the film, but... You've never seen the film like this before.
Yeah, I mean, I love celluloid as much as the next guy. I love the kind of romance of the flicker and everything. But, you know, even after a while, like, you start to fetishize that format a little bit, and it starts to, you know, show it's there's something kind of lovely about the fact that the movie will look slightly different every time as it kind of tours around. But kind of getting past that fetishization, you get to into the art itself, the ability to restore images into this high of a digital degree, it's approaching the point where I don't get as hung up on that romance anymore.
Right. And also you'll get to see an introduction by Ben Mankiewicz.
Yeah, of Turner Classic Movies.
Turner Classic Movies and a family that has deep roots in Hollywood itself. So
Hollywood and Washington, D.C. There's
right.
kind of the movie mogul side of the family and the political side of the family. So when Jody and I were talking with Ben a few months back, he talks about how, you know, movies basically are his third great passion after politics and baseball. So we'll be hitting at least two of those this year, because he'll be on hand for The Candidate this year,
which is
part of our collaboration with the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership
at
UVA.
And when and where is that screening?
All right, that one's Saturday at, am I right? Is it St. Anne's?
Yes.
All right, I did.
Saturday, St. Anne's, 4:30.
There we go.
Right, presented by the Sorensen Institute, in discussion with Ben Mankiewicz and Paul Begala.
Yeah.
Returning.
Yeah, exactly right. He was here last year for a screening of D.A. Pennybaker and Chris Hedgerus's The War Room.
Mm-hmm.
So he enjoyed himself pretty well, so he's coming back for that screening. And another legendary broadcaster is coming in for broadcast news,
right.
And that's Jim Lehrer.
That's Sunday. This one I know. That's Sunday, 2 o'clock in St.
Look at this guy. He did it. I will say, at our press conference prior to our launch party, which is just a small group of, you know, a dozen or so seasoned journalists here in town, Jim Lehrer got the biggest oohs and ahs reaction from them, which I didn't expect.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, kind of lovely at the same time.
Yeah, Spike Lee, he's going to be here.
Jim Lehrer. Lehrer.
Yeah, Bill Macy. Yeah. Seen him before. But Jim Lehrer, oh my God.
Yeah.
We've seen him on TV. My guest, talking celebrities, nerding out on films, fetishizing films, is Wes Harris, programmer of the Virginia Film Festival. You can pick up the guide now all over town. You can go see what's going on at the virginiafilmfestival.org. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. My guest, Wes Harris, programmer at the Virginia Film Festival for 11 years now. We are talking about the Virginia Film Festival that starts on November 9th for 4 days, November 9th through 12. You can find out what's going on at the Virginia Film Festival by picking up one of these really lovely film festival guides, or go to and also go to virginiafilmfestival.org.
Nailed it.
We've been talking about some of our guests. We talked about Ben Mankiewicz, Harry Chotiner. Am I pronouncing his
Chotiner? Yeah,
Chotiner. Thank you. He's new this year, right?
No, he's been coming for a good number of years, actually.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He's a friend of our board member of ours, Ron Yerksa, who you've probably seen or interviewed probably once or twice over the years. He's a professor at NYU who comes in, and he's one of a handful of folks alongside Joe Fab and Mitch Levine, who are just... Joe's a filmmaker, and Mitch is kind of a festival consultant, and Harry's a professor that we bring in for that added amount of coverage in terms of moderating conversations, introducing screenings, ones for which either Jody or myself aren't able to cover, since we're just two people and we have eight or nine venues screening all at once at some times.
And you guys are running all over the place.
Yeah.
So I see you during those days.
These are some folks that we trust implicitly, both in terms of taste and expertise and the kind of hostly duties of sitting on stage and managing sometimes an ego or a conversation or a star.
Wait. You told me there were egos involved at the Virginia Film Festival?
We've been super lucky that we've never had anything upsetting. But, yeah, the folks really love it when they come here. So that kind of stuff never really gets in the way.
So you mentioned Mitch Levine. I'm going to do a little sidebar here. Something that I'm pointing at the empty chair next to you. Something I was going to commend Jody about. For those of you who were privileged to be on the lawn a few weeks ago for the bicentennial the UVA Bicentennial, the beginning of the UVA Bicentennial.
A nine-year-long bicentennial.
Which, smartly, somebody made the decision, hey, let's focus on the arts.
Yeah.
So they turned to Jody Kubasa in his capacity as Vice Provost for the Arts. He brought in Mitch Levine, and it was this just spectacular celebration. Music, performance, dance, light shows. Mm-hmm. Light shows being projected on the rotunda. Got to see the rotunda burn down one more time.
Yeah, that was crazy.
It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. And, you know, it was a work day for me and my wife, and we were exhausted, and we had to stay.
Yeah.
We stayed there till 11 o'clock at night. So I mention that only because if you saw that or you saw some of the coverage of that, those are some of the same people mm-hmm. who are putting on the Virginia Film Festival.
Correct. Yeah.
And just a few weeks apart. It's amazing. I mean, somebody's earned a vacation.
This is the time of year where we don't even really, and I was not a part of the Bicentennial. I was sort of support for several of the others who were. So I'm just sort of speaking collectively for us how this time of year we really sort of don't allow ourselves to feel it until, you know, Thanksgiving or so.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, holy moly, that was a thing we did, wasn't it? But at this point, I don't want to say you get used to it, but after doing it for a decade, you kind of get used to it.
Yeah.
And it's been, because Jody and I and Jenny and John, I mean, we've been there for this before, during, and now in the throes of this explosive exponential growth that we've had the last few years. We're about three times the size we were when we started out, I started out.
Right.
Both in terms of numbers of films, certainly in attendance. The last couple of years, we've hovered right around 32,000, which is enormously more than what it was back when, you know, I was a student intern.
Yeah, I mean, that's practically the population of Charlotte.
I mean, look at it. I mean, a town of, 40,000, you say, on paper, which I know in college towns is kind of wiggly, but that's really incredible for a town of our size to have that kind of an appetite for film like that. And artists that we bring in are just floored by it and go and then tell that story. We send them back out into the industry as as ambassadors of ours, whether we sort of realize it or not. And we've started to really embrace that and look at what, you know, that is growth. You know, the awareness of our festival throughout the industry, throughout all levels of it, from, you know, independent filmmakers to A-list stars to the heads of studios. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in the game now.
And you mentioned Ben Mankiewicz from TNT. We also have a relationship, the film festival does, has a relationship with another important body right up the road, and that is the Library of Congress.
Yeah, if you're not aware, the main film archives for the United States, essentially, for the Library of Congress is up in the side of a mountain in Culpeper.
That's right.
It was this enormous facility that was built decades ago with the intention of refueling the American economy east of the Mississippi in the event of nuclear disaster.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the Packard campus up in Culpeper has been since turned into just one of the most amazing, you know, Indiana Jones level, just treasure troves of all sorts of formats of films.
So, you know, so you've been there, you've taken the tour.
Yeah.
It's worth going up there. If you're interested in a film or just interested in history, that the depths literally that they go to preserve films deep in these caverns built into this mountainside. And then we have this relationship with him.
Where we get to celebrate the National Film Registry, which the Library of Congress started, which has been going for about 30 years now, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an additional level of framing. We're able to give some of our classic screenings. So it's sometimes a jumping off point. Sometimes it's very explicitly that National Film Registry. We've shown restored 35 millimeter prints from their archives. When Leonard Maltin came a couple of years ago, he and I worked together to kind of hand select and curate some prints from their archives. And it's really just a lovely and incredible facility. They have the largest collection of nitrate film prints in the country, and it might be the largest in the world. They don't even know. Because I mean, the stuff is you know, ridiculously dangerous, but they're one of five locations in the country that are technically equipped to project nitrate film still. I don't think they have, just for the sake of, you know, not burning the building down.
Okay. I'm going to slow down a little bit here, because you may recall, I'm an archivist. I used to work with nitrate film back in my days at the UCLA Film and Television Archives. It's not radioactive.
I know. It's fun, though. It's fun. This is the kind of format romance stuff that I like, the explosive kind.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we won't bore our audience with this, but just I just want people to know we're not gonna space 1999 Culpeper.
Sure.
The mountain is not gonna blow in an atomic explosion.
I will say the individual rooms where they store those nitrate films, individually reel by reel, is you're sort of walking in this room about this size, and at the end of it there's this large kind of upward, you know, cavern going up to a vertical infinity, and you realize that, oh wait, that's in case this stuff ever does explode, there's somewhere for it to go up and get out of the mountain.
Well,
they're prepared for it, but the problem
with nitrate is that once it catches on fire,
you're not putting it out.
It's very difficult to put it out. It will burn underwater.
Yeah.
So it's not like it spontaneously it combusts. But you want to keep it very far away from flame. We've gotten kind of a sidebar there.
You're welcome, Charles.
You mentioned that I get to interview some of these filmmakers. So I want to make a plug for that. Mm-hmm. That this show, the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call in WPVC, is sort of the first in our traditional podcast about the Virginia Film Festival, and I get this great gig that you and Jody for some reason have allowed me to do. And that is, I park myself downtown and I get to talk to filmmakers.
Yeah,
we do short little 5-minute interviews. I send them offline to my producer, usually Dan Gould, who's usually sitting right behind me here in the studio, and he cuts them together quickly, and we post them on Seaville Podcast. .org, where you can also find episodes of the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. And then we tweet them out. And it's a really nice thing because it gives filmmakers a chance to sit down prior to their screening, to just sit down and talk about their films, what brought them to the Virginia Film Festival. Short little interview. They like the attention. We like giving them the attention. And then we post them on Seaville Podcast. We tweet them out via the Virginia Film Festival Twitter page. I think they eventually get archived on the Film Festival website. So, but if you're
it's a really great service that you do for us, because it's you sit down with filmmakers of all stages of their career, of all degrees of name recognition. So especially for some of those more emerging artists, they really love being able to do that and have a little bit of a spotlight on them within this, you know, kind of a community of a couple of hundred artists getting together during the weekend. They can really stand out and have a platform that way.
And it's good for audience members too, because then you can follow the VFF Twitter feed, which is at Virginia Film Festival.
Maybe.
Yeah. go to the virginiafilmfestival.org website for the Virginia Film Festival Twitter feed. We'll also be hashtagging VFF 2017.
Sure.
Yeah, we do that. We do all that stuff. I see you glazing over a little bit.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you can listen to those interviews. So you can tune in and get little 5-minute interviews with these filmmakers talking about their films prior to the screenings, and just kind of get a little sousson, a little taste of what's going on the festival. Okay. Speaking of what's going on the festival, Jody did not join us today, so Wes, I'm going to turn to you. What have we not talked about yet that you're really excited about?
So I talked about how in our anniversary year, we're looking back to our past. I mentioned those shot-by-shot workshops.
Mm-hmm.
Another great thing that is unique to the in-person experience is we have a tradition of screening silent films with live musical accompaniment.
Thank you. I was going to get to that. You're showing some Charlie Chaplin films.
Yeah, we're showing... centered around The Immigrant, which is as ridiculously timeless now as it was when it was first made 100 years ago.
And timely.
Yeah, it's unfortunately the case.
Yes.
So we're showing a trio of Chaplin two-reelers, was highlighted by The Immigrant. Our other silent film event is a screening of Alfred Hitchcock's 1926 suspense film, The Lodger, which is probably the best known of his silent films, which even still is has a certain ceiling in terms of audience familiarity. So,
yeah, I think it was his first, if I'm recalling correctly. And it is an amazing piece of work. I mean, if you're familiar, if you're acquainted with Hitchcock, but if you've never seen this, it's a silent film.
Yeah.
It has so many early Hitchcockian touches.
You see like, the wrong man in there. You
right,
see
right.
so many tropes that he returns to time and time.
And some of those great tricks that he figured out to do
right.
with the camera. And these cameras were huge.
Oh, yeah.
A scene where... I don't want to spoil it, but the people who have this house where they have lodgers come in and stay,
right.
and they start to think that the man upstairs might be a murderer.
Right.
And there's a scene where he's walking around upstairs and they look up at the ceiling and suddenly they see him in the room. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
Even by today's standards.
Yeah, just by being a movie, you know,
yeah.
just kind of that stuff. And
you get live music.
Yeah, we have Matthew Marshall and the Real Music Trio
mm-hmm.
Performing at both of those events. Matt's been coming in and performing at silent screenings for us for years now.
And yeah, and he was actually a guest on the Wake Up Call a couple
oh, cool.
years ago. Yeah,
yeah, and a new thing that we're doing this year is Matt and a composer named Charlie Barnett, who's up from the D.C. area, who's worked on a great number of film scores. The two of them will be leading a composer symposium on the Saturday
so
of the festival. I'm not going to dignify that. but it's sort of getting in the weeds of, you know, what does it mean? What are you looking for? What are the beats you're matching from mm-hmm. image to sound and toward what end? And, you know, what the difference between someone just walking across a stage and someone walking across a stage with music accompanying them.
Yeah.
I mean, it elevates it, and it's an opportunity to pick a couple of really great minds who come at it from pretty different ways. Matt being a live performer and Charlie, you know, the one in the studio making, you know, scoring films by the image. And they're both kind of the same job, but I've just been tickled by how much of a sort of kismet and kindred spirits the two of them have found each other in the last months since I connected them. So I think it'll be a really
nice.
Cool event, and it's completely free as well.
So here's why I'm telling people to go out and pick up the festival guide, because you can go on the website, go, oh, here's the film I want to see, add it to your cart. Oh, here's another film I want to see. But you really got to pick up the guide and read through it to find gems that, you know, at a smaller festival, might get more attention, but there's just so
yeah.
much going on here. I mentioned to you before you came in here as one example. Saturday at 12 p.m. at the Violet Crown, Last Flag Flying, a new film by esteemed director Richard Linklater with Bryan Cranston and Steve Carell and Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds like an awesome film.
Yeah.
I don't even need to know anything more about it. And it's just like showing at noon on Saturday.
I know. I mean, we were able to convince the studio to let us do a small screening of it prior to its release
mm-hmm.
and, you know, not burn the audience for it or anything. Don't put it in the Paramount, but it's kind of fun to just kind of have the opportunity to, you know, check out something that'll probably be one of the big fall or
yeah.
winter films when it does get released. So,
yeah,
yeah there's a lot of stuff to dig in and find and explore the weird corners of the program.
And what about the international films? We always have a strong international.
Yeah, this year especially, we have an enormous number of international films, but specifically we have 10, which are their respective countries' submissions for the best foreign language film category at the upcoming 2018 Academy Awards.
Right.
We've had, you know, somewhere around half a dozen or so the last couple of years, and this year I'm really excited. It's a nice clean 10, and some really incredible and hugely diverse pieces of art, one of which, actually, the film from Estonia called November, was produced by a former Virginia Film Festival staff member.
Right.
So it's and that's one of the more wackier films we're showing this year. So if anyone listening wants to find the kind of David Lynch analog or wants to have their face melted, seek out November.
We've got like a minute left. You want to tell me about Family Day?
Yeah. So We'll be back on the UVA Arts Grounds in the Kolber Theater and in the open area outside of that with arts workshops for local children and students. Our Young Filmmakers Academy, for which a number of elementary schools in the area have created their own short films, will be screening that day. We have a free screening of The Aristocats at 10 a.m. that morning. This is Saturday the 11th. And followed by a free screening of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which
that's
is
a 20th anniversary screening.
20th right? anniversary of the publication of the first book.
Got it.
So, yeah, the film's more recent than that, but we're commemorating that first publication this year of the Philosopher's Stone with a screening of Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, and the Aristocats screening 10 a.m. at the Kolber Theater is a sensory...
So that particular screening is a normal kind of just, as you would expect from the theater-going experience. Right. We're doing a smaller screening of that the day prior, which is a sensory-friendly screening, which means we work with nonprofits in town, including the Autism Theater Project. So what that means essentially is that it's a less jarring kind of experience, a less overwhelming sensory right. experience. The lights aren't fully dark. The sound is softer. We have a safe space outside the theater for if anyone needs to take a break and escape the crowd. And we've been doing that for a couple of years now, and it's a really cool thing.
Wes, thank you so much for coming in. How many films are we showing? How many events are there going to be over those 4 days starting November 9th?
Yeah, we're saying 150. It's between 150 and 200 films this year, about 100 events, because, you know, we get right. the groupings of shorts. So, yeah, solidly into the triple digits for events we're putting on.
So by all means, go out and pick up the festival guide. It's a beautiful blue kind of a nighttime motif with these Virginia moths on it and a big 3-0 on the front. Go to the website at virginiafilmfestival.org. Follow us on Twitter, on whatever our Twitter handle is.
Figure it out.
And follow hashtag VFF2017 for interviews with filmmakers and breaking news on the virginiafilmfestival.org website. Wes, as always, I think we've done this 10 or 11 years in a row
sure.
ourselves. Thank you for being here. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.